Welcome back to another episode of Popping In with Alexa and Molly. I'm Alexa.
I'm Molly.
And this week we have some really exciting topics. We are both like grinning ear from ear, ear to ear. Yeah. But I'm going to let you go ahead and get started with your favorite topic, your comfort show.
Dance moms.
There we go.
Well, we thought today would be a good day to talk dance moms because the reunion just premiered. Well, it would last week, I guess. And I just thought I'd do a little reunion recap.
Yeah. So for full clarification. I don't know anything about Dance Moms besides what we talked about with JoJo Siwa. Yeah. I didn't look anything up. I was like, I'm going to take this ride and then Molly's going to be my guide.
And we've talked about this previously, but like you did see one episode because...
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I was very drunk.
Yeah, but I saw you witness. I witnessed you watching it. So
it was New Year's Eve, 1999. No, I'm just kidding.
2022.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like 2 a.m.
Yeah. And I was like, hey, we should turn. We came back to the Airbnb.
I'm 2 pretty sure I was pouring more champagne for people that did not need it.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, it'd be great as if we put Dance Moms on the TV. And it was actually somebody did. And it was my first time ever watching. It felt so weird. This is why it was my first time ever watching Dance Moms on a big, like on a TV.
I've
only watched it on my phone. I'm not kidding. I can, again, pull up YouTube right now. Dance Moms is the first thing that comes up. I am constantly watching Dance Moms
on my
phone.
Can I tell you a secret?
What?
So when we talked about JoJo Siwa a few weeks ago, I texted Matthew and I was like, I need you to get a picture of Molly just like watching Dance Moms on her phone. And he was like, I'm on it. And then he texted me like last week and he was like, I just want you to know, like, I haven't forgotten. I just like, he was like, it's hard to tell when she's watching Dance Moms or not or something like that. And I,
so when we're in bed, I'm never like watching Dance Moms in bed. Mm. I am watching YouTube and it's usually like the Kardashians or something. Like it's usually Kardashian clips in bed, but Dance Moms, I like walk around the house listening to.
Oh, okay. You know what I mean? I like envisioned like you sitting on the couch with it on playing on your phone or
not
your
really,
iPad.
No.
Okay. Mm. Well then
it's more like white noise. For
I guess
me.
I sent Matthew on an impossible mission.
He will. Just for that, I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to be funny tonight. I'm going to like pull it up and be like, here I am watching Dance Moms.
It was like, I think like 3 weeks ago. And I was like,
he's not going to remember then.
I'm like, it's fine. Never mind. But anyway, so you guys will never see that.
That's hilarious.
Anyways, back to Dance Moms reunion.
So they did a 10-year reunion on Lifetime, which is where Dance Moms aired. And it was interesting. It was, go ahead.
No, I have not. I literally know
you looked
nothing
like you were about to ask
moms.
A question.
Like, who did they bring back? What was interesting?
So
what's the vibes? What are people coming to this reunion for?
Believe me, I have all that.
Okay.
Don't
okay.
you worry.
Okay. You go.
So to all of those questions, those are good questions. And I think, So basically, I want to give context of the show first, just to kind of give everyone the characters. So Dance Moms, and just so you know, because I don't think you really fully
set
know.
The dance stage.
I'm
going to
set the, yeah,
set the
I'm
dance
set the
floor.
Scene.
Okay.
It's murder on the dance floor. Okay.
Aww.
Basically, so Dance Moms took place in, it was a show that aired on Lifetime. And it's basically, it revolves around a dance studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it was just this little dance studio. They won a lot of competitions. The dance teacher and owner of the studio is named Abby Lee Miller. So the studio is called Abby Lee Dance Company. And basically the show focused on like a group of, it was her junior elite dance team. And it was basically the girls on the team they came from basically the show putting them together. It wasn't like they were already a team. They all danced together. They all grew up together. But, like, this team was based on who the producers wanted on the show.
Mm-hmm.
The Dance Moms, particularly. Like, so it's called Dance Moms because it's basically about, like, the drama between the moms and their conflicts with not only the dance, with not only Abby, but also each other because, they're, you know, they're competitive.
You singing Murder on the Dance Floor just gave me the idea in my head. I cannot imagine how phenomenal the true crime podcast would be of, like, Dance Moms Murder.
Oh,
Yeah. Can you imagine?
It's basically been everything but murder. There's been physical altercation. Well, there's seriously, there's been physical altercations. People have been arrested.
That's where they draw the line.
Abby Lee Miller went to prison. So it's
what?
Like.
What? Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But that's not for Dance Moms related, really. It was more for tax evasion or whatever. But something to do with money. But anyway. So basically, I'll just kind of give a rundown of who all the moms are. I won't do it like a huge dive into Dance Moms because that would take for, I could go on forever. Listen, I know every single person who has ever been on Dance Moms. I could tell you any, I say character, but they're real people because it's a reality show, but I could tell you anything. But anyway,
okay.
So basically the show, so it's Abby Lee Miller. She's the owner of the company. She was the dance teacher. So there's Melissa. She is the mother to Maddie and Mackenzie Ziegler, however you want to say their last name. You probably know who Maddie Ziegler is. She was the girl in the Sia music video. She became pretty famous. She's now – okay, no. All right.
I don't know what music video. All right, video.
But most people, if you know anybody from that show, you would know Maddie. She ended up becoming pretty famous. She was like Abby's favorite. She was the star of the show of Abby's team. She
not JoJo? Always,
No. We're not. JoJo did not even come onto the show until like season 5.
Okay.
And as previously stated, as per my last email, JoJo was not Abby. Abby did not like JoJo.
Right, yeah.
She was very mean to JoJo.
In terms of if you knew anyone from the show.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I meant like, okay, so other than JoJo, I would say Maddie's the most successful. She was in West Side Story. She was in a Steven Spielberg movie.
Oh, okay.
She works with Sia. Like, Sia always has her in, like, her music videos, or at least used to. She became known as, like, this chandelier. She was in the chandelier music video.
Okay.
She was Abby's star, though. She was, like, the best dancer. She was known for having, like, what's called, like, the Maddie face, which was, like, she would always go, like, you can't see me, but she got, like, she was very emotional, just a really good.
Okay.
She just, like, had something. Okay. And it's not that the other girls aren't good. They are amazing. But something about Maddie was just always really, like, special. And I'm only giving this context
She lit up a room.
Yes. Like, she really
stage
did.
Stage for the murder podcast.
She did. And she was Abby's favorite, which caused a lot of conflict between the moms. So Melissa was her mother. Melissa was, like, the ultimate dance mom. But she was the dance mom that, like, she knew what she was doing because she never fought. She hates conflict. She never fought with the other moms. She was kind of conniving like that. She would always kind of... whatever. She was very close with Abby, but she let her daughter's dancing speak for itself. So she never fought or anything like that. Okay. So then she's the mother of Maddie and then Mackenzie. Mackenzie is Maddie's little sister. Then Christy is Chloe's mother. Christy and Melissa do not get along. To this day, they do not. They're not friends. Chloe was Maddie's competitor. So it was the two of them always kind of put against each other. But Chloe would always be like second to Maddie. Even though she's an amazing dancer, very talented. So that was always kind of Christy's thing. Christy is the one who has the Back to the Bar podcast that I listen to.
Yeah.
She runs it with her friend Kelly. Kelly is the mother of Brooke and Paige. They are sisters. They were, Brooke was the oldest. She was the, sorry, just let me finish
go ahead,
this
go
one
ahead.
Part. She was like the Maddie before Maddie was Maddie. She was like Abby's favorite before. And then Paige is her sister, and she's a good dancer. She just would forget her solos all the time whenever she had a solo.
The way you're, like, talking – have you seen that? Like, I think it's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where it's, like, the way you're piecing it together where it's, like, what's his face is in the background.
Literally.
And he's, like
– if I could, but I don't need it because I have it all. That, what you're thinking, is literally in my brain right now.
You don't need the connections. The connections are the synapses firing in your head.
So then there's Holly, Dr. Holly. Oh. Dr. Holly. She's like the very like level-headed one, very intelligent. The other moms, not that they're not smart, but like whatever. But she was like she's a great mom. Her daughter Nia was not one of the stronger dancers on the team, but she was, you know. The thing is, they're all really good because every week they would have to learn a new dance, which was very – and that was a lot of the conflict too, was like Abby favored Maddie because Maddie, you know, she won all the time. But also because she would just thought she was better than everyone. But all the moms would be like, hey, our daughters do the same thing that Maddie does. They have to learn new dances every week. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to do this fast. That's why I sound like a psycho right now.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
why.
Anyway, so Holly is Nia's mom. She was just very – she's just an amazing mom. She always, like, you know, fought for Nia. But – she was a school principal, like whatever. Anyway, great. Queen Holly, as people call her. Then there's, and just last one. Then there's Jill, who Jill is like the ultimate dance mom. She's like known for calling her daughter Kendall, like my little Kendall. She'd be like, my little Kendall. Like, and Kendall, their kind of iconic thing was they did a Rosa Parks dance. Kendall is white. What? They did a Rosa Parks dance, right? Abby was like, we're doing a Rosa Parks dance. Nia's the only black girl on the team. But she goes, literally, this was insane. The show was insane, Alexa. Abby literally goes, but don't like get your hopes up. Like, I haven't picked my Rosa Parks. As if like, yeah, and Nia's the only black girl on the team.
Why would so anyone Jill, think it's appropriate there's an episode, to do a dance mom or not a
she did Rosa all Parks kinds of things dance. Like that. Like, oh, she what? Did all kinds of they always had themes.
She should have gone to jail for that. Just well, that idea.
It, yeah. And so the whole yeah, well, it was a group dance. It was supposed to be about like just the power of Rosa Parks, but she was saying so she says, I haven't chosen my Rosa Parks. So Jill is like, what if Kendall could be Rosa Parks? And Kendall's a little white girl.
Yeah.
So to this day, Kendall actually goes to JMU.
Oh.
To this day, people will go up to Kendall and be like, Rosa Parks. Like, they call her Rosa Parks. It's so funny. It's so ridiculous.
That is so
the show so is so cringe. Camp. It's okay. So camp. It's hilarious. So that was my, like, 20 minutes into that was my 20 minutes into Dance Moms, basically. But, oh, and then I guess I should say, so JoJo, as we know, JoJo Siwa, she came in season 5. I explained this a couple episodes ago, but she became famous through, or known through Abby's Ultimate Dance Competition.
Yeah.
She
Abby's Cinematic Universe.
Yes. So she ended up becoming a main cast member on the show, but she actually came on after Christy and Kelly left. So Christy and Kelly were not on the whole time. They both got into big fights with Abby. Kelly's was pretty iconic. You've probably heard Kelly's fight on TikTok where it's like, get your finger out of my face.
No.
Oh. Alexa, where do you live?
Not on, I watch TikToks of like dogs and like the North Sea. I can literally quote that
entire scene.
I believe it.
If something's my Roman Empire, it really is Dance Moms.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. But
mine is Shrek too. But anyways.
Really? I sent you a TikTok about Shrek 2 today.
Yeah, I think I replied to it. For some reason, your TikTok, like, it didn't show me that I had any new messages, and then I opened it, and it was, like, 15.
Probably because I send you 1,000, so it's, like, it's freaking out.
But the thing is, okay, again, like, this is a digression. But the thing is, like, there's only 1 year age difference between us, but I feel like such an old woman because I send you everything on Instagram, but then you send me everything on TikTok.
I
only check TikTok, like, once every 2 weeks because, A, I'll get sucked in, and, B, I just don't want to open an app and there immediately be sound. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. Please stick with us. We're also going to talk about challengers later, dear listeners. I just don't want everyone to like be like, what? But
anyway.
If you're
not here for Dance Moms, then you're not here for Molly.
Us. Oh, yeah. And or me.
Us, sure. Yes.
Really me. Okay, so I have to give you the characters because they're on the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... okay, so I talked about JoJo. Yeah, they're
the real life.
Literally,
people.
They are characters on the show, though. So JoJo came on later. Kalani and her mother Kira were also added later on the show. They were also on Abby's Ultimate Dance Competition. Kalani took the place of Brooke and Paige. Brooke and Paige are the daughters of Kelly. Kelly's the one who got in the physical fight with Abby. Get your finger out of my face. So they took their place. So they all don't know each other.
Okay.
When you think about it, like JoJo has probably never met Brooke and Paige up until this point.
Interesting.
She doesn't really know Chloe, and same with Kalani, really. Like, they don't know Kalani that well. So that's why the reunion was so interesting because there were some people who didn't come back. So all those people, I should do a pop quiz with you. I should be like, who are Melissa's daughters?
I won't fail because I don't remember anyone's name ever, much less like... Yeah. 10 characters you just introduced me to.
I know, and I'm talking fast because I want to get through it all quickly.
No, I mean, I think you're doing a great job. I'm engaged. I just don't remember anyone's name, as you guys know from all the previous episodes we've ever done.
So let me just say first, okay, so Dance Moms kind of became famous again. Like, it gains like a new audience each year as people get older, as people discover it on TikTok or whatever. It has gained a new audience. So I think with this reunion, it's definitely, it was kind of in, it was a 10-year reunion, so it was, like, wanted, but it was also, like, they were sort of responding to this sudden, like, craze of Dance Moms, this right. new craze, this new, like, young audience of it, I guess. But anyway, so I gave you all the people, but there were some people who didn't come to the reunion, who just decided not to. And Maddie and Mackenzie did not come back. I mean, they're famous now. They're kind of, I think they
were at the Met Gala.
So remember how before I said they're not that famous, but they are like, I mean, Maddie's been in like, she starred in an HBO Max movie. Like she was in a Steven Spielberg movie. You've probably seen her. I mean, I don't know. But they decided not to come back, and that's their decision. They basically, yeah, they never talk about Dance Moms ever, really. And if they do, they will refer to it as, like, the dance team I was on or, like, my dance teacher. But, like, they are not close with Abby Lee. They were Abby's favorites.
It is shocking that anyone is close with Abby Lee because
JoJo is.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, super, you know, into the universe or whatever, but it just seems like a very traumatizing, emotionally abusive environment.
It was. And the thing about it, I will say this, for anyone who watches Dance Moms, like, you know this, like, everybody kind of always talks about the trauma that, like, the girls that Abby was mean to. Yes, they obviously went through some trauma, but I think, like, Maddie has gone through trauma as well. The way Abby treated her was, like, kind of disturbing. Mm-hmm. She was very manipulative towards her. She would kind of, like, turn her against the other girls.
Yeah.
Because she was her favorite. So she'd be like, no one would be happy for you. Like, everyone's jealous of you. And that was, in turn, like, that was very... Probably, I mean, I'm sure Maddie does not look back at it, and she doesn't want to revisit it, and that's totally understandable.
I always think, like, in those situations, is it worse to be the least favorite or the most favorite? Because I think, like, they are both, like, very traumatizing positions. Like, I just want to be in the middle.
She was awful towards some of the girls. She literally threw a chair at Paige. So it's hard to say whether one is better. I think it'd be better to be on her good side, but they are not on her good side now. She and Melissa, they used to be friends. They do not like each other now. They're, like, enemies now. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of layers to it.
Wait, and you're saying Abby and Melissa, who's a child?
Melissa was the mom.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
She was close with Abby, and that was,
I'm just, again, like, picturing a grown woman and her enemy is, like, a 10-year-old.
But she, kind of to them as well. They don't like to talk
about
her.
That's crazy.
And one time Maddie did a cover of on Cosmopolitan, and she did an interview, and she basically said, like, yeah, I don't – she kind of talked badly about Abby. Mm-hmm. And Abby made a video – Abby's, like, so crazy. She's such a weirdo. But she made this, like – kind of response video to that, and just was saying, you know, she doesn't like how Maddie won't give her credit, whereas she loves how JoJo always gives Abby credit. But it's like, well, you love that JoJo is rich and successful and talks about good about you, but I'll get into that. So anyway, so Maddie, Mackenzie, and Melissa did not come back to the reunion. Also, Nia and Holly did not. And Nia released, because some people were like, oh, it's because Nia's in college, blah, blah, blah. There was all these theories. Nia just posted a video, actually, the other day, and she was like, hey, I just kind of want to respond. Like, I just simply didn't want to come back. She was like, there was no reason. I just didn't want to. Respect, okay? Totally understandable. But I feel like because they weren't there, and they may have had Kalani and JoJo anyway. I'm not really sure. But I think to kind of fill up the space, at least, they had JoJo and Kalani on there, and it was just not – they weren't on the show the whole time, so it was super annoying to hear from – they talked the most out of everyone.
Yeah, well, JoJo just talks a lot.
She does, and she's annoying as hell. Like, well, she really is.
It's also interesting to me that they did a reunion because – so the way it sounds like to me, like – it's each season, it's kind of like a little bit of a different set of girls. So, like, there are girls like you, oh,
not,
never mind.
No. Well, I mean, not for the first few years, no.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like you were saying, where it's like some of these girls might not have met some of the other ones. So, to do a reunion, it's just like sometimes I think, depending on who you have, it's just like if they haven't met, this is going to be like, it's like, it's whatever. It'd be like me going to the high school reunion of someone like, I don't know, 5 years younger than me. Like, I'd be like,
so it'd be,
oh, you had the same experiences but different? Like, you know
what I mean? I'll get into that because that is what's so irritating about it is, like, JoJo kept talking about her experience and basically kind of what's the word I'm trying to think of? Saying that their experiences weren't valid when it's like, you don't have the same experience because you did not grow up in the studio. These girls did. Brooke, Paige, and Chloe... and kind of Kendall. There's sort of some whatever of whether Kendall's an OG because Kendall came on in season 2. But still, she was still pretty young. they grew up in the studio.
Right.
JoJo and Kalani did not. Okay. Yet they were the two that talked the most on the reunion, and it was so frustrating. And because JoJo's just annoying, and she'll talk a lot anyway, and she likes being famous, so I think that's why she talked so much. And that's just who she is. But that was kind of the main, like, takeaway, that everybody was kind of like, this reunion's so annoying because of JoJo.
Yeah. I feel like JoJo is, sorry, not to go into JoJo because we already did a whole episode, but I feel like she is famous off of being annoying. Like, I feel like that's, like, the main claim to fame.
She is the epitome of, like, any press is better than no press. Like, even negative press is better than no press.
Which I'm pretty sure, I can't remember, but I feel like it was, like, Stalin or someone originally who said that. I saw recently.
Oh, yes. And JoJo is Stalin.
Oh.
No. Just kidding.
Reincarnated as a dance kid.
Well, she actually
dance that she does where her head goes. Yes. Where her head, like,
so they made fun of her on SNL this weekend. They've
been making fun of her all over the internet.
And my
thing
is, like, people were like, oh, wait till she sees this. Like, she's going to die. And I'm like, no, she probably loves this. She doesn't care that she's like, the fact that you're made fun of on SNL.
Yeah. That's huge. I would love to be made fun of on SNL, unless it's, like, really, really mean.
Maddie has performed on SNL.
Okay.
But she's never been made fun of. But that's where I think, like, it's interesting because they actually talk about Melissa and Maddie McKenzie not being on there. And at one point, Christy is like, Christy hates, like, Christy and Melissa do not get along still to this day. And she was like, JoJo, she's just jealous of you. Well, I'll get into it. Anyway, she basically, at one point, she says, like, JoJo, she's jealous of you because you're so successful. And I'm like, no, I think Maddie is successful. Yeah. Well, JoJo's successful, but Maddie is, like, I would rather be Maddie's level of fame than JoJo's.
Sounds like JoJo just is, like, rich, but Maddie's successful.
Maddie was in a Steven Spielberg movie.
Career way.
JoJo is made fun of every day. Like, and I mean, whatever, but she's just annoying. Anyway, so those were all the people that showed up to the reunion. It was super awkward. I don't know. For those who watched it, I'd be curious to kind of hear your takes on it, because it was very just uncomfortable. Like, you could just tell it was, like, an uncomfortable vibe, because, again, some of them were close from, like, you know, just growing up together, but then, like, you've got, like, JoJo and Kalani, who it was just awkward because some of them replaced the others,
right?
They don't know each other that well. JoJo has a reputation. It's just weird.
Yeah.
And you could tell. So one thing I did not love about this whole reunion was, like, it felt like we were watching the reality show. And it was supposed to be a reunion. I want to see them talking, not just reacting to a bunch of clips from the show. I could watch that anytime. Yeah. But it was like they would show clips of the show, and then the producers acted like it was Dance Moms, and they would actually, like, instigate. And there was, like, drama in the reunion.
Oh. They always do that, though. Like, they're trying to, like, make it spicy and interesting. Like, they're always just like, and, like, here's, like, a clip of her talking crap about you or whatever. And it's just like,
and I don't want to see that drama.
Yeah.
It was just very weird. Because, again, at one point, Chloe's mom, Christy, and JoJo actually got into, like, a feud a couple years ago. Because Christy was talking about Abby and the choreographer, Gianna, who... Mm. She was Abby's, like, assistant and, like I said, choreographer. And she was saying how she actually didn't think Gianna was very nice either. And JoJo was like, she made a reaction video to that. And she was like, how dare you say that? Gianna is the nicest person. And, again, it's like, you don't have the same experience as they do. Like, they grew up in the studio.
Yeah.
You shut up. Like, you don't have the same experience. Like, honestly, your opinion is not, like, wanted here. You know what I mean? That was kind of, like, just in general. So they actually did that. They talked about it, and, like, they brought up drama.
But, like, that's what they're going to do, because they're trying to boost ratings and, like, I don't know. The thing is, like, I guess, like, people come for the drama. Because I think, like, when I asked you, like, what do you love about Dance Moms? And you said, like...
The drama.
Yeah.
But, like, the dancing.
Yeah. You said you were like, I actually don't watch the dancing.
I skip the dancing.
Which is very funny to me.
They have some amazing dances. The thing about Abby is she was actually a very good... choreographer, I guess. I don't know if that's, but she was a great dance teacher. And that's why they were such good dancers. But, like, I don't know. Anyway, they also talk a lot about, they have a lot to say about Maddie and McKenzie not being there, which made me mad, because at one point, like, Christy So they FaceTimed Christy, and Christy wasn't there either, but it was because she had, like, other obligations, so she just couldn't be there. But they FaceTime her in, and basically they talk about the fact that they actually had a party at the Ziegler's house the night before and invited some of them, but not all of them. They
Love
didn't
that
invite.
Drama.
They didn't invite JoJo and Kalani because
I wouldn't.
It was for Paige. Sorry. It was like supposedly it was like a birthday party for Paige, and Paige doesn't know JoJo and Kalani, so why would they invite them?
Yeah,
but they tried to say it was like they were trying to manipulate the narrative and get them to not talk badly about them on the show. That was according to Christy. Christy always. I do love Christy, but she sometimes kind of annoys me with like she's always looking for problems. That's kind of how I see her. And there's a lot of layers to it. I don't know. But it annoyed me. And at one point, Kendall says that they don't want to acknowledge dance moms, yet they still profit off of dance moms, which is not true. Maddie and Mackenzie literally never name dance moms. They never really talk about it.
Yeah.
The other girls are the ones who profit off of it. They're the ones always making videos about it.
And also, like, I don't think you have – like, it reminds me of – Robert Pattinson, how he's just always like, yeah, I hate Twilight.
Yeah.
He's profiting off of it. You don't have to you don't always have to love your job even though you're making money off of it.
Yeah, and they were all, like, they did not realize what they were getting into, just the same as the other girls. Like, I mean, it's okay for them to look back and be like, yeah, actually, I'm really not proud of being a part of that. It gave me a lot of trauma. It gave, whatever. So I just thought it was interesting that Kendall said that because I'm like, they really don't profit off it. Actually, you guys all do. You guys make videos, which is fine. That's totally fine. Yeah, that's why you're famous, and that's okay. But you shouldn't get mad that the others don't want to acknowledge it. They're very successful now. Mackenzie's a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Maddie is doing, like, movies now and stuff, and she's pretty famous. I literally wrote, shut up, JoJo, shut up, JoJo. She talks a lot on the reunion, but I didn't have anything next to that. I just said, shut up, JoJo.
Okay.
And I will say, as annoying as JoJo was, she was a very good friend to Kalani throughout the episode. It was interesting because, so Kalani, you could tell she was, at one point they call her out, and it's to talk, like, she's backstage with the moms and with JoJo. And then they call her out there, and she's, like, not wanting to go out there by herself. Mm-hmm. So she literally drags, she's like, JoJo, come with me. And so JoJo's like, okay. And, like, she goes with her just to kind of give her comfort, I guess. And at one point, like, they touch on, so like I said, they do some really heavy dances on the show. They'll do like they'll touch on like different topics.
Some heavy dances. Parks.
Well, one of them was like a Suicide Hotline dance.
What?
Yeah.
I'm picturing it to like Hotline Bling.
No. It was a serious, very like whatever. People always talk about it. But
interesting.
Kalani started getting like very emotional when they talked about it. And she was like, I've never talked about this before, but like I've had those thoughts, like, I guess since the show. And she got very emotional, walked off the set, went into the bathroom. Of course, they're following her.
Yeah.
But JoJo was like a good friend to her and like went to her and like comforted her and stuff. And it was a very breakthrough moment. And that was huge because that's kind of one of the most talked about things from the episode because or from the special, because people didn't know that about Kalani, and it just kind of came out. So that was interesting. But the thing about it was just interesting to see, like, how much – the reunion, it was almost like it was for the fans, but it was also, like, for themselves as well because they sort of – it felt like they had almost, like, never addressed some problems before. So, like I said, the infamous, like, fight between Kelly and Abby was, like, get your finger out of my face – and for you don't know, and for those who don't know, there's a scene at a dance competition where basically it's when Kalani's first introduced.
Okay.
They kind of go behind like the Kelly and Christy's backs. They have their daughters are doing a duet together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now suddenly Maddie and Kalani have a duet together, and they're great dancers. They're like the new duet partners. They're obviously going to get first place. So Kelly and Christy get really upset about it, and Kelly makes the comment of, like, you're clearly having Kalani here to replace us, so, like, replace us, like, whatever. And, like, Abby, I can literally quote the whole thing. But they basically get into this, like, physical altercation where Abby, she's pointing her finger at her, and Abby literally pretends to bite her finger, like, eat her. So Kelly literally slaps Abby, like, grabs her hair, and it becomes, like, a physical fight.
Interesting.
Kelly gets cops called on her. That's the end of Kelly and Abby, Kelly and Brooke and Paige on the show. They're done after that.
Yeah.
So it was like it was very infamous. Everybody always talks about it. Well,
every time you say like, what is it? The finger? What's
get
that?
Get your finger out of my face.
Every time you like make that pause, you're like, get your finger out of my.
Says it.
And that's like, I'm just like, where's this going every time?
She literally is like,
pull my finger.
Didn't you just say that Kalani, or didn't you just say that Brooke was miserable, so maybe we should put Kalani in her place? No, I never said that. Yes, you most certainly did. No, I didn't, Dingbat. Listen, get your finger out of my face.
Wow, this really is your Roman Empire. I'm very, like, proud of you.
I could have that. I love this for you. I could have that. They should hanging put you, up on my wall.
You should be a guest star on Back to the Bar.
I could. I really could because I have so many questions for them.
Yeah.
I would put them on the hot seat because sometimes, like I said, I love them, but I do think Christy.
I'm picturing Abby Lee.
Christy's a fighter.
I'm picturing Abby Lee, but like on Hot Ones where she's eating like she the would wings.
Well, she. So to be fair, now Abby Lee. So Abby Lee Miller went to jail or went to prison. And then she ended up having. Being diagnosed with cancer, so she's in a wheelchair.
Oh.
So it's actually very sad. And at one point, they literally showed... This was dark. During the reunion, they showed Abby going through, like, surgery or whatever, like, for her cancer. And all the girls are, like, it's so disturbing. The footage is horrifying. And the girls are crying, especially, like, you know, the ones that grew up with her, like, Brooke. And
yeah.
It's really complex. You can see, like, what this show did to them. Because, by the way, so after Kelly, Brooke, and Paige left... They never danced again. Like, Brooke and Paige never danced again. So this show, like, really ruined these girls' love for dance.
They never put a toe to the dance floor.
No,
again.
Brooke was known for being, like, a contortionist. That was kind of her area.
What a thing to be known for.
Well, that was just, like, that was what she was really good at. And so her...
Meanwhile, I can't touch my toes.
She could have gone into, like, she could have gone on to be in, like, Cirque du Soleil. Like, that was sort of the...
I would love to see that.
She doesn't dance anymore. She did just get engaged the other day, so that's exciting. Mm. But
yeah.
Because she's now, I mean, she's like in her 20s now. But anyway, so it's very sad. So Kelly got very emotional during the reunion because she was very much like, and she's been divorced since, and she actually blamed the show for her divorce. She blames the show for a lot of stuff in her life. And she thinks that a lot of stuff wouldn't have happened if it weren't for the show.
Yeah.
Which surprised me. I didn't know that she would, like, it surprised me when she said she blamed the show for her divorce. I didn't know.
I believe that because I feel like reality TV is just such a weird experience. Like, I don't think anyone comes out of it better.
No. And they talk about this on Back to the Bar. They basically, they did not know it was going to be a reality show. They thought it was going to be a docuseries when they signed on.
Oh.
And it ended up turning into, like, drama being, like, you know, and it just, it wasn't, and they couldn't get out of these contracts.
Yeah. Because the thing is, like, the way that, like, in a docuseries, if it's a documentary, it's portrayed differently than reality TV, where I think, like, reality TV, they're going to cut and crop and make things maybe seem, maybe not even, like, as they are. Mm-hmm. Like, they're creating villains based on the
100%. They can do what they can manipulate these characters. I mean, that's why I say they're characters, because they're known for, like, it may not be what, I mean, they are who they are, but, like, some of the things that they say, they may not have actually said it like that.
Yeah.
Could have been, like, a Franken bit, as they're called. Like,
not to, like, bring back Giggly Squad or whatever, but, like, Paige DeSorbo and Hannah Berner talk about that all the time because they run Summer House, and I never watched Summer House, but they talk about all the time, like, they were just, like, things happened, like, this drama happened where it's, like, you don't even see, like, a certain side, or you don't even see certain things. Like, the way the editing is done, like, made them into villains. And they were, like, it's incredibly traumatic because then all of a sudden it's, like, the internet hates you.
Right.
Whereas I think with a documentary, it would be different because it's, like, I've never made one, I don't know, but, like, they aren't editing for drama.
Yeah, exactly. You're just trying to get a story out there. You're trying to get a point, like, a, you know.
Yeah.
So Kelly and Brooke and Paige had a very emotional moment together, and you could tell it was sort of, I don't know if it was the first time, but you could tell it was at least probably the first time in a while, or maybe the first time where they really talked about it, and they were all very emotional, especially Kelly and Brooke, because Kelly was like, I have, you know, you guys never danced again. I feel like I ruined.
Yeah.
And so the physical fight, as funny as it is for all of us to get your finger out of my face, like, as funny as that is, Brooke was saying on the show, on the reunion, she basically said, seeing two people who were very important to me physically fight was a lot. And so, like, and I've always thought that because, you know, as a kid, I can't imagine, I'm thinking back and, like, I cannot imagine. I once had a mom yell at me when I was a kid, like, one of my friend's moms yell at me, and it was literally one of the most, like, traumatizing things for me. And, like, I just can't imagine seeing, like, your mom and, like, other adults, like, fighting or getting yelled at all the time. And, like, it's just...
It's, like, have you ever, like, when you would go over to your friend's house and, like, their mom would get mad at like your friend or whatever. Yeah. And then you're just sitting like, there oh, like, well, yeah. Can I still have like another slice of pizza or whatever?
Yeah. Or I mean, but again, just like seeing your mom fight with people, like that would just be, I've always wondered, like that must have been so traumatizing for these kids. And so they do kind of that, they do touch on that a lot, which I thought was very, interesting. But I think my overall sort of thing about it was like, I would have loved to have heard more from Chloe, Brooke, and Paige, who are really the OGs of the show. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Kendall kind of. I consider Kendall an OG, but a lot of people don't because she didn't come on till season two. But I mean, she was like 8 or 9, so I consider her an OG.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it just, I thought it was strange that it just felt like Kalani and JoJo talked the most. And it was like, mm-hmm. nobody wants to hear from you guys. Like, yeah. you were not, you did not have the same experience as these other girls did who literally grew up. The thing is, when you grow up in a dance studio, you, like, your dance teacher is almost like, you know, somebody, like, it's almost like another parent. And
it's
that's kind
of like when you do any sport, I think.
Right,
like
yeah, exactly.
The coach is you're, like you're,
yeah. And that was, so that, I just can't imagine, their relationship with Abby is a lot different than Kalani and JoJo, because by the time they came on, they were coming on to be on Dance Moms.
Yeah.
They weren't going to the Abby Lee Dance Company, like, you know. And I was talking to my friend Kelsey about this. Shout out Kelsey, but she you know watches Dance Mom. She watched the reunion as well, and she was a dancer, and she said the same thing that like, it's really complicated when you know because you are very close with your dance teacher, and they can basically shape like who you are essentially.
You're spending more time with them usually than your parents.
Exactly. And so you could see it was very complex for them, for Brooke, Paige, and Chloe, because they had a relationship with her. And at one point, Kelly even says, she's like, they asked Kelly, you know, the other moms asked her, would you go back and do things differently? And she said, or they said, if Abby came to you now and apologized, would you, like, what would you do? And she's like, I think I would accept, like, I would want to be friends with her again.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting because she was always kind of on, instead of taking, like, Abby and Melissa's route of, like, success and fame, like, she went, like, Christy's way, and, like, she was close with Christy and fought with Abby and stood up for her kids and defended them. And she literally says on the show, sometimes I think about a lot, what if I had gone with Melissa and not gone with Christy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's just interesting. You could tell they have really – it was almost like they weren't really ready for the reunion.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't – there was a lot of emotions.
Like, they were young when it started. Like, how old would you say, like, the average age is now of those girls, women, girls?
Today?
Yeah.
They're, like, all in their early 20s.
Yeah, so, like, I think about, like, me in my early 20s. Like, you know, you're processing things still, but you're still, like, not even fully an adult. You're still just, like – you know, like, what's a 401k, you know? So it's just interesting.
Brooke was the oldest. She's about 25 now. Like I said, she just got engaged literally the other day. But I think she's about 25. But the others are, like, yeah, they're all around 20, 21, somewhere around there. But I will say, so this – I did see a TikTok that gave a good analysis of it. Shout out to Ashwini, I think. That's her username. But she said she felt like the reunion was made for new fans of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the people who kind of discovered Dance Moms through TikTok and, like, the meme of it all. And she was like, fans who learned about Dance Moms through TikTok and all the memes, but it didn't really go into depth for, like, the true fans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an odd thing because it was produced by the original producers of the show. So you'd think that they would want to go into more of, like, so that was kind of, I totally agreed with that, though. That's in, like, a perfect analysis of it, where it was like they never went into, like, full, I get, maybe because I listened to Back to the Bar, the podcast that Christy and Kelly host, but it's like, I felt like I know more from that podcast than they didn't really go into a lot of the things that they could have on the reunion.
Yeah. So. Well, that's what I find. Like, I feel like the reunion's always just like, oh, we're getting, like, we're just doing things for numbers.
Yeah.
But there's nothing I love more than a podcast about a show. You know, like, I always feel like they go more in depth. Like, they're talking about, like, you know.
And that's become a whole new thing now. Like, literally every show that was famous now has a podcast by people who were on the show.
Yeah. Or even, like, I remember Gilmore Girls. Like, I listened to the whole podcast of Gilmore Guys, and they're phenomenal. It was great. Like, they weren't on the show. They were just random people who were like, okay, we're just going to rewatch the show. Yeah. And I was like, I love this. I want an in-depth episode-by-episode discussion of the show.
And that's what I love about Back to the Bar is they go into depth of each, like, they do an in-depth, you know, discussion of the show. They literally recap it, but mm-hmm. it's interesting because they were on the show, so they can give their, like, here's what actually happened. Because, like, you know, like you were saying earlier, it can be so manipulated by producers, and they're like, that's not actually what happened, so.
I just can't, like, imagine, I don't know, being on a reality show that young.
No, it's, or just... no, and that's really, it's, you can tell it messed them up, some of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so I just would have liked to have heard more from the original girls. Like I said, JoJo and Kalani, they can talk. I think it was fine to have them on because they were big parts of the show. And obviously JoJo became so successful. But, like, it was strange to have them on at the same time. They were on it for almost the same amount as the others. And it was just, like, it felt inappropriate. It was just, like, no one wants to hear from you guys, like, as much as we did.
Yeah.
So that was, it was an interesting reunion. I think it could have been better. There could have been more. Yeah. But.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, thank you for taking me on that ride.
Yeah. I could do a full 10 episodes about Dance Moms if I have the time.
Maybe we can do a special episode.
Yeah. Maybe the 20-year reunion 10 years from now when this podcast has.
Yeah.
Hopefully has maybe like 15 listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you guys stay with us for 10 years.
Yes, please.
Yeah. But anyways, well, thank you for that. And I guess we'll take a pause for a wine break because I need to refill.
Yeah.
So today we have a wine from Chris's friend's daughter's wedding. He had a bunch of extra wine, so he gave it to us. It's the Y Series Unwooded Chardonnay, and it's good. I like it. Here we go. Molly, would you like some more?
Sure.
And as I'm pouring wine, I am reaching across our special guests, fans of... Let me just get to those little last strips there.
Thanks.
Fans of the show will know him as, one word, my boyfriend Chris. and he is here to talk to us about a movie that we saw together, mainly about sports.
Woo! Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I got it. Don't worry.
Just moving the mic so you know.
Okay. I appreciate it. I've never done this before, so...
He's kidding, folks.
It's weird to see Chris in podcast mode.
Professional mode. Chris, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking an old fashioned, as I typically do on the days that these podcasts are recorded.
If you just heard that, Molly had a fan next to her that just fell.
Oh, no.
She's fine.
She is fine. And I'm drinking an old fashioned with Woodford Reserve rye.
Wow, so, that sounds lovely if I liked old fashioned whiskey or rye.
It's all right. Old fashioned Tuesday. Today's Tuesday.
Yes, yeah. Sorry. So today we are here to talk about a couple things. The first of which is Challengers, which is one of Molly has been so excited to talk about. But so we saw it together with our friends of the pod, Eric and Megan, last week. And what do you like? Okay, you were so excited, Molly. So you kick us off. What do you think?
Okay, so I liked it.
Okay.
I did like it. I did. I think it was exactly what I was expecting.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, I have things to say about the actors, but I will let you guys give your opinions first.
Okay. Chris, what did you think?
So I was dragged to this movie. I originally did not want to see it in theaters.
It's not true.
The idea, well, yeah, it is.
The way I tricked him is I
we
always...
We can't drag you to do anything.
The thing is, like, Chris is very much...
I wasn't physically dragged to a movie, but I was told that some folks were going to the movie. They ended up not going to the movie. But then some folks ended up joining us on the movie, which was really nice. But the thing about this movie is that I wanted to see it for the tennis aspects. Mm-hmm. I did not care as much about the horniness of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I think you're the only person who was like tennis.
I was excited about the tennis.
I think you were excited about the men.
That's true.
Wow. Yes. Yes. And I will say, true. I think I was excited about both.
I was excited about
that's
both.
Not, okay. That's not.
No. That, okay, if anyone can sit about here and say they were excited about both, it was me.
Yeah. You can't do that to her. She showed up with it like dressed like a tennis player.
Okay, that's not like true. A weird way. I just have it.
No,
I was like wearing a tennis dress.
Like a, I mean, but like you
I
were
brought my tennis racket like, to the theater.
But it was like a tennis outfit.
Can I tell you my favorite meme that came from this movie, though? Mm-hmm. Well, it was a Letterboxd review, but it was like, "May thy racket chip and shatter." I thought that was very funny.
I love that. Yeah. Okay, so the thing is, I liked it. It was not as horny as I thought it was going to be. And as we discussed, yeah. I think very interestingly about Zendaya is, and I noticed this in Euphoria, she's never in any sex scenes.
No.
She's always in, like, lead-ups to sex scenes or post-sex scenes, which is fine. Yeah. Like, there were some, like, hot, like, almost sex scenes, which is whatever. But I think
she doesn't really, do nudity.
I think the hotness of the movie comes from the homoeroticism.
Yes. And it's almost like the tennis is the sex.
Like, yes, it really yes, is. Yes, they really, like, get into that. And I, what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, so I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and reading a lot of things about the screenwriter. So the screenwriter for the movie, because, again, I love the tennis parts of it, and I wanted to know how they did it. I came out of this movie thinking, wow, I liked it better than I thought I would. Again, not as horny as I thought. A lot of tennis. I really love that part. But the more I've thought about it since, it's just the more that I love the things, the subtle things that they did in there related to tennis.
Mm,
and
yeah.
The writer, his name was Justin Koritskis, mm-hmm. I believe. And he got the idea from watching Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka back in 2018, which is a very infamous match, where Serena was docked points for receiving coaching from her coach on, you know, who was up in the stands. And in Grand Slams, you cannot receive coaching while you are playing tennis. It's just a feature of tennis. It's part of what makes the sport incredibly interesting and incredibly infuriating, is that when you are out there, it is only you, and you have to beat the person over there, and you cannot receive any assistance from anyone else during the match. So
I've never thought about that, actually. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, yeah. So Serena... So what happened was her coach... the chair umpire noticed her coach making gestures in the stands and then deducted points from Serena. So Serena goes off because she claims she did not see it.
I was going to say that.
And then it, you know, kind of spirals out of control there because she you know, she was about to lose the first set anyway, or she had just lost the first set. And she, you know, she says, like, to the umpire, she's like, "I'd rather lose than receive, like, then cheat."
Yeah.
Or, like, then receive coaching. She's right. Like, "That's just not how I do things, just so you know." And then she walks away. So, like, that
I bet
drama,
she was so pissed at her coach.
Yeah, because another funny thing about tennis is that they do, like, sideline interviews of coaches during matches.
Yeah.
And he basically admitted during the match that he did gesture to her. That part was never in doubt. Like, he did make a gesture to her that he should not have made to her.
Did he do it on accident, just out of, like...
Basically, okay. Yes. He, like, he, you know, he just did it because he always does it, and the chair umpire just so happened to notice it.
I bet she didn't see it. Like, she did not...
See, that would be me as a coach. It reminds me of, like, whenever you play code names, and you're not supposed to, like, give any hints as to, like, what's going on. I immediately, like, I am always, like, "Look at my eyes. Look at my eyes." Yeah. I'm like, "Not that one."
But I bet he wasn't even doing that. He probably wasn't even, like, "Look at my eyes." He was just probably, like,
He made a gesture kind of like a moving his hands kind of forward and backward gesture. And so the screenwriter sees that, and then he, like, he actually grew up in a tennis family. Like, his family grew up always going to the U.S. Open. Okay. And he's like, but he was never that interested in tennis. He played when he was a kid and then quit because it was really difficult. And he didn't like, because tennis is a sport that it will embarrass you very quickly. Like,
yeah,
you will quickly,
it will humble
I think
you.
He said something along the lines of, you'll quickly realize how bad you are when you start playing. But that's you know, part of it. But then he just could not stop watching tennis. So then, like, he was like, once I ran out of Grand Slams, which are, like, you know, Wimbledon and the Australian Open, he's like, then I started watching Challenger events, which are, like, as you all know now from the movie, they're, like, the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
It's where, like, players that really, like, they need to win this tournament in order to continue their career.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. If you watch a Challengers event on television, you are watching one camera that looks like a webcam.
Yeah.
And it's just two people playing in front of nobody.
It reminded me, sorry to interrupt you really quick. It reminded me of, have you seen the movie The Fighter with Mark Wahlberg? Mm-hmm. It reminded me of that because they kind of do that same thing, except their version is like, it's like a stepping stone. They like have to, if you're not doing great, like you basically fight somebody who's not good to like just move up and like, it's, they call it a stepping stone or whatever. But it reminded me of that kind of, it was that same vibe of like, they just use somebody to like get ahead.
Yeah. And he also, you know, when he went down his tennis rabbit hole, he ended up reading a book by Andre Agassi.
Mm-hmm.
He married Brooke Shields, right?
Yeah, he did. And yes. They had a horrible marriage, apparently. Really? I watched a whole documentary. But anyways.
Yeah, but Andre Agassi was, you know, he's one of the greatest tennis, men's tennis players of all time. And he ended up playing a Challengers event, mm-hmm. You know, when he was going through a really bad dip in form. And then that event ended up, you know, giving him the confidence to then go back up. And then I think 2 years later, he was number one in the world again. But his coach at the time actually was the tennis consultant for this movie.
Oh, interesting. So that was one thing that I was going to bring up, because it's interesting because I've heard people say that, like, Zendaya and Josh O'Connor and, is it Mike Feist?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that they did a really good job at playing the tennis. But then I've heard other people say that, like, they did a really bad job.
Yeah.
And I don't know which is true, but I learned today, I didn't know this, that the tennis ball throughout the film, they're not hitting a tennis ball. It's CGI.
Yeah, CGI. Well, no, I mean, it is pretty apparent that it is, like, oh, as, really? Like, a, yeah, like, when I was watching it, I was like, no, they're certainly not hitting it, but
half the time, it's a camera, because the camera is the tennis ball.
And they do great with the camera angles, like, they do, there's just so many subtle things that they did in that movie that I was just like, I really enjoy the tension that they create, like, the tension with, you know, with Zendaya's character, Tashi, where it's like, again, like, I think it's part of the thing with the Serena Osaka thing where it's like, she can't coach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she has no choice but to just sit here.
So I didn't know that. That's good context to have because I didn't really think about, like, she really is obviously just sitting there and it's usually her just, like,
going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't think about, like, she's a coach, but she's sitting in the stands with the audience.
Yeah.
So I think, like, to give some, so again, we might say some spoilers in this, but to give some background on Challengers, the premise is basically Zendaya's character, her name is Tashi Duncan, and she gets into, like, this menage a trois with these two tennis players when they're younger. What are their names in the movie?
Art
and Pat.
Pat, yeah.
Yeah, Art and Pat. They have been friends for, like, years. They went to, like, a tennis boarding school together. And they're all basically trying to make it big in tennis. And Tashi Duncan, Zendaya's character, is, like, the biggest female tennis player in the world. And she is dating Pat, who is Josh O'Connor. And they get into, again, spoilers. They get into this huge fight right before one of her, like, it's not even, like, a big match, just whatever, and she ends up hurting herself. Because they're in
college. Well, she goes to college.
She goes to
college with one, with Art.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they go to Stanford.
Goes pro.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, she ends up, like, hurting herself in a way that it's just, like, she can't really recover ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting the way they do the movie, because they're showing present day where it's, like, Art, Pat, and Zendaya's character are all adults, and you learn that Art and Zendaya, Tashi Duncan, are married, and it's a Challengers event where, just so by circumstance of whatever, Pat and Art are competing against each other, but then they go back and forth in the timeline.
Yeah, it's like it's basically like Greta Gerwig's Little Women. Like, it's, if you think of that, it's like they keep going back and forth between past and
I think they do a good job for the most part. Some parts I was like kind of confused about, like, where they were in the timeline, because I will say it's like supposed to be like a 13-year difference, and I don't think any of the characters really look that different. They aged Zendaya by cutting her hair.
Yeah, I didn't think but I thought the guys, they did okay at, like, Art, for example, they made his, when he was younger, he was wearing, like, a wig, like, a bushy blonde hair, and then when he's older, it's, like, cut short, and he looks obviously more mature.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, too, the whole movie is, basically the tennis match.
Yeah.
So, like, that's, like, what the movie is, and so by, like, through the tennis match, they're telling the story, basically.
Right, yeah. So it's, like, you start out with, what do they call, like, not innings in tennis?
Sets?
Yes. So they start out with, like, the first set, and you're kind of like, what's going on here? Like, there's clearly some tension. Mm-hmm. And then they go back in time, and they show that, like, Zendaya and these two guys kind of had like a weird relationship thing where she was dating one of them and then she ends up marrying the other. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just show like their like decade long history and how they get to like being literally challengers both for Zendaya and for like in this tennis, challengers yeah. match.
Yeah. And yeah, I just thought that they did the tennis really well. I thought that they did their relationship well too, especially Tashi's role in it. Like they kind of touched on that and they kind of mentioned that the screenwriter, he said he was kind of influenced by Roger Federer yeah. and his wife Mirka. Roger Federer is one of my favorite tennis players ever.
Yeah.
I read his book. A book about him by Christopher Clary. It's called The Master. Highly recommend it. But his wife has been, you know, instrumental to his success. She was never his coach, but she's basically been his manager throughout his career. And she was a former player and she got hurt and could no longer play anymore. But at the time they were both very successful at tennis and that's kind of how they met. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of Tashi's, you know, Tashi, once she got hurt, she very much was trying to channel, you know, was trying to use one of the two of them to become successful.
You
know, almost through them. Like, you know, y'all remember the thing that she does, and this isn't a spoiler, but in the beginning where they're sending her the mock-up for that ad that goes up on the skyscraper.
Yeah, and she adds,
like, I think it said, like, the challenger, and she adds an S because she's also in the picture. She wants, you know, she wants people to know very much that art success is
her success.
It is very much her success as well.
Because what ends up happening is she ends up coaching Art, which I think is very interesting. And it's very clear that she does not... She says this line to Josh O'Connor, and it's toward the end of the movie, where he's like, you should come be my coach. Like, Art wants to retire or whatever. And Art is her husband, and she says to him, do you think, like, Art is just, like, a dick in a tennis racket to me? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, yeah, that is basically how she treats him, because she cheats on him. She basically says at one point that she's going to leave him if he doesn't win this match.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I saw an interview with Zendaya, and we talked about this actually. So when they go back and like they go back and forth between past and present, and when they show her when she's younger, I think her character is very likable.
Yeah.
Or at least is likable.
Pre-injury, yeah.
Pre-injury, she's, you know, she's kind of like, not snaky, I'm trying to think of like a word. Whatever, she's just very like, mysterious. She's just interesting. Yeah, mysterious and just like... But then when she's older, she's just like a stone cold, like...
Yeah, because all she ever loved was tennis. She can't play anymore. And she even says a line in the beginning. She's like, tennis is like a relationship. She's like, it's like being in love.
Yeah.
And I think she's getting off on watching, like, this dynamic. Because the thing is that she loves about tennis is the dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
What better dynamic in the world than your husband and your former lover playing together and being like, who's gonna win?
Well, and she also sees, like, I guess, spoiler, but, like, she sees the two of them as sort of, like, you know, a thing. Like, they're... Because there's that level.
Yeah. Going back to, like, the... Okay, again, there's, like, a level of homoeroticism in the movie that I think they do very well, where, again, like, the two main characters, they are... The way... They kind of, like, mimic each other in their actions. Like, they walk in stride together. They sit down at the same time. But it's very clear that... I would say, like, that is the romantic relationship in the movie, is these two arguably, you know, straight-coded men who are clearly, like, in love with each other. And there's a whole scene that I guess was actually improvised where they're in the cafeteria and they're eating churros together, which is very phallic to begin with. But there's, like, this just small moment. I forget which character does it, but one of them, like, before the other one sits down, he just takes his foot and he pulls the stool closer to him. And then they're literally, like, sharing churros, like, biting churros off each other. And I'm just like...
It was almost, like, the most... Like romantic scene of the movie.
I think the biggest sexual tension is between those
for
two.
For sure.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say about Zendaya's character, though, Tashi, is like, so she says in interviews, she's always like, one of her things, you know, when she was talking about this movie, she was saying one of her things when she plays characters is she tries to make like an unlikable character likable.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting because I saw that interview before I watched the movie and I was like, I don't know. Because, like,
she's not likable.
Pre-injury, yes, but post-injury, I was just like,
This character was, by no means likable.
No.
There was, well, we saw it. I think we all agree she wasn't likable.
Yeah.
There was also a really good review of the movie in Vogue by Serena Williams.
Hmm.
She saw the movie.
Yeah.
Because she I think she talked to Zendaya for the cover of Vogue last month, I think. Really? But she was just talking about like how like she hated Zendaya's character, and she she was just like, she's not a nice person, but she understood her character. Like the way that she acted, she's like, because like, she's like, I don't know, like I acted that way. She's like she said something about like, when you are the best player in the world, it gets very lonely because nobody really talks to you. Like you're on top.
Interesting.
So like she said that when she was on top, the only person she ever talked to was her sister Venus.
Right.
Luckily they played at the same time.
Yeah.
But like, she's like, no, other than that, it's like nobody's telling us anything. It's like, we're the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of gives the vibe of like, I like with Tashi, it's like, I'm bored. I want to watch these two little boys like play whatever. I don't know.
Well, I think it's also interesting. So in the beginning before her injury, she talks about how she's going to Stanford, and Josh O'Connor's character, Patrick, is like, why are you going to Stanford? You don't want to go pro? And she was like, well, I don't want my only skill to be hitting a ball with a racket. And she says later on in the movie, you know, she went to Stanford or whatever, but like she was injured. And she says, she's like, I guess my only skill in life was hitting a ball with a racket. I don't think it was necessarily her only skill, but it was like the only thing she actually did care about.
Yeah.
She didn't care about her husband. She didn't care about really her family. Mm-mm. She didn't really care about anything. All she cared about was tennis, because I think she saw tennis as relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true. Somebody pointed out too, and I mean, this, I don't know if this is like a lot, but when she had injured herself, when she injures herself in the movie and she's like back there with her leg, like, you know, it was like right after, the only person who was with her was Art.
Yeah.
She didn't have any friends with her. And that might not be, somebody pointed that out, but I'm like, well, maybe just no friends were at that.
I think it's mostly just Art. Like, Art wanted to be there for her. Right. Like, I mean, like, everybody loved her, though. Like, that's the thing in the movie where, like, you know, they do the thing where, like, any, like, if you watch a tennis match in person, your head is just going back and forth and back and forth. But in the match where Tashi gets hurt, everybody in the stands, except for Art, is only looking at Tashi.
Yeah.
So, like, now she was very much beloved, but Art loved her.
Yeah.
And, like, that's part of the reason why he did what he did.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference of being, like, beloved versus loved.
Loved,
Like you were saying, when you're at that level, it's like she didn't have friends. Mm-hmm. But, and I think, like, so Josh O'Connor's character, Patrick, brings up a lot. He's like, well, Art's, like, basically your lapdog. He's going to do whatever you want. And, you know, I think she ends up with him because she does want someone who's just going to do whatever she wants, because he basically is living the tennis career that she wanted to have. Mm-hmm. I think her and Josh O'Connor's character are more similar in that, like, they have this whole thing where he says, he's like, I forget what he says exactly, but he's like, yeah, I'm a bad person. He was like, you are too. The thing is, you just don't want to admit it. And I think they are just very similar people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the attraction comes in. But I think it's also, I don't know.
I think it's also that, I mean, the reason that they broke up is because she tried to give him coaching. Like, they're in the dorm room and he was like, what, are you my coach now? He's like, I thought you were my girlfriend. So, like, he very much did not like that dynamic. He very much wanted a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Right. And she,
then later he begs her to.
Yeah, well, you know, like, and I think that's a really good part of the movie where it's like, okay, well, now, obviously, you've lived an entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Now I do want you as my coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because, like, there's the whole scene, like, and I would say it's, like, besides, you know, maybe, like, one of the beginning scenes, it's, like, the steamiest it gets where Josh O'Connor's character comes to visit Tashi in college. It's before, it's, like, again, right before she gets injured. And literally, like, she's on top of him, like, they're making out or whatever, and then she just starts talking tennis.
Yeah.
Where she's like, you should be doing this better. Like, have you been doing blah, blah, blah? And, like, he's just, and, you know, obviously they stopped doing whatever they were doing. And he's like, are we talking tennis right now? You know what I mean? And it's because it's, like, that's what matters to her. And, you know, the thing is, like, the timing isn't great. But, like, she doesn't care about, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sure, we haven't seen each other in months. I guess we could sleep together. Or we could talk tennis. That sounds more intriguing, engaging. And the thing is, he wasn't willing to put up with that. Art, I think, was.
Yeah.
And it's such an interesting dynamic, too, because there's this whole scene where in, like, the present day, they're in, they all end up, like, being in the same hotel or whatever, and Patrick O'Connor's character, Josh O'Connor's character, Patrick, says, like, oh, why are you staying in a hotel? And Zendaya says, Lily likes hotels. Mm-hmm. And he looks confused, and she's like, Lily's our daughter. And to me, I'm like, he knows. He knows what your daughter's name is. You are his ex-girlfriend and his lifelong best friend. He knows you have a daughter named Lily. But the way he played that to make it seem like he didn't care, like, he's manipulative and so is she. Anyways.
I think art, everybody always acts like art is sort of like the, like, they're, like, those are the two, like, manipulative ones. But I actually think art was sort of the original manipulator of the whole thing.
Yeah, that's true.
He was the one who told her, like, oh, he doesn't really love you. Like,
yeah.
And I just think that's interesting because I feel like he looks like the good guy, but he's actually the OG.
Yeah.
They were both willing to do anything to get Tashi.
Yeah.
Like, remember when, you know, when they were going to Tashi's victory party, Art didn't want to go.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But Pat made him go.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Art goes and he's like, oh, I understand why we are here now. And then they play that song that did not belong at that, you know.
Oh, the music. Okay.
Really just.
So I did want to talk about the music for sure.
Okay. So I just have to say, okay, before we talk about how good the music is, there's this one song in the movie.
The song is called Uncle Ace by Blood Orange, and they introduce the song on the radio as if it's playing on the radio. Now, keep in mind, this is about 2004. The song came out in about 2013, 2012. I haven't been able to get over it.
I said maybe it's like a Tarantino movie. They're using different songs in different
time. The thing
time
is, throughout
lines.
The movie, Chris leans, every song that's played, he's like, now see, this is from the 1500s. I don't think that that's accurate or whatever.
Oh, the
it was.
Opera
like,
one,
yeah.
Yeah.
The, no, that's just like, fine. And every other song, he'd be like, okay,
part.
This one,
actually
this,
listened to
he'd
that
be like, okay,
day.
This song is the appropriate time.
I loved the score.
My two biggest passions in life are sports and music. Then I was mad throughout the entire movie, and then I saw that it was Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor
yes.
of Nine Inch Nails, and I was like, oh, never mind. Okay, it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. I loved the score.
Well, also, like, I just love them.
It fit the movie.
Like,
yeah,
you
weren't
the
so
only
much.
One who noticed that discrepancy. I would say I listened to three podcasts about Challengers, and each one was like, yeah, that song did not
Are
come
you
out
serious?
There.
When? What? Which one?
Which
Why
podcast?
Did you not send them to me?
I know. What?
I mean, it was just like a brief mention. I know it was like Culturalistas and then two random ones
who?
That I found.
Send them to me after
it's
this.
It's like Culturalistas is like Bowen Yang.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Bowen. I love Bowen Yang. Sorry.
sorry.
I know that. I actually did not know that's what the podcast was called.
Yeah.
I always see clips, but I
But know. They talked about that. Like, it was Hi. Literally just like one line. But anyways.
It was just wild to me. But again, that's just me.
No, they're the best. And I thought, because the score was a little, well, I think most people loved the score. I talked to somebody at work who said that they didn't like it, but.
They're wrong.
Oh, yeah. No. Like,
the score
great.
Is great. Like,
no,
it's great.
I loved
like,
it.
It's great as a movie. It's also great where it's like, I'm going to work out to that. Like, I would go for a run to that. Yeah.
Boys
yeah.
Noise, like the electronic group that
yeah.
they kind of had doing the score. You can listen to Boys Noise all day. You could work out to them. You could run to them. You can do
yeah.
anything to a Boys Noise remix, Boys Noise
yeah.
song.
And I particularly remember that. Do you say it was from the 1500s? That are you talking about the operas? Or not opera, but like the children's choir
yeah,
song
that's,
or whatever?
That's what I was just like, this is
I liked
the 1500s.
That. I liked that part.
Oh, no. I mean, it was fine. I was just making a joke. I was like, well, this definitely isn't from
wow.
2004.
That's when I thought you hated the movie, Chris.
No. Oh, but, oh, I was going to bring that up.
What?
Oh, okay.
What?
Well, I'm looking at Alexa's phone over here, and I don't know if she noticed that I have, wait, did you look this up on your own, or did you look it up because I have
no, I
on
looked
my
it up
paper
on my own.
In all caps, wife, Celine Song, over. Past Lives.
It's literally
oh,
on
yeah.
the notes for
no,
this.
No, she did know that.
Okay,
I will attest
I just
to that.
Remember,
she does
like, who
remember
she was
that.
Specifically
she
married to.
That.
So he talks yeah. about that in the podcast that I listened to, the
wait,
tennis podcast.
Wait, we should say he, like, what's
so
the...
Justin Karitzkis, his wife, Celine Song, wrote Past Lives, mm-hmm. a movie that I think all three of us...
I've never seen
you
Past
didn't
Lives.
See it.
Yes.
Okay.
No. Notoriously, but... Molly has not seen it in our Oscar deep dive episode.
It was like the one Oscars movie I didn't
Because she
see.
Said, I just don't care about romances, but...
But
it
the...
looked so slow
he...
to me.
Well,
it was
he...
so good.
Well, he very much tried to downplay it, and he's like, no, like, I don't see a lot of similarities between the two. And it's the one thing during that interview where I was like, you don't see any similarities between a movie in which a woman wonders how her life would be different
if she went
had
with the
she
other
chosen
guy.
A different man.
Yeah. yeah.
Now, like, and he said, like, he's like, I don't think Past Lives is about a love triangle, which I would agree. Like, Past Lives is not really a love triangle.
It's called Past Lives, and Challengers literally goes back in the past.
But Challengers yeah. is absolutely a love triangle. Yeah, like, that is the entire movie.
I think Past Lives is a love triangle. And, okay, so, again, for clarification, Celine Song, she directed Past Lives, and she is married to the writer of Challengers. Past Lives, the plot of that is basically a woman is, like, best friends and in love with, like, this guy who's her best friend when she's a little kid, and then she moves to America, and it shows them as adults, like, reconnecting, but, like, she's married to another guy at this point, and he comes to visit her, and literally, like, it's, again, just the three-person dynamic mm-hmm. with a woman in the middle, and I'm just like, what's going on in their relationship? Like, I'm just curious. I'm like, y'all seem very inspired by this triangular connection.
I wonder
who the other person is in there.
I guess the thing...
They come out with another movie.
The thing with that, though, is, like, why I wouldn't call that a love triangle is, like, she very much has love for the Korean guy, but, like, it isn't the same. Like, they were childhood sweethearts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like when they were, like, 10, you know? Oh. So, like, they keep in touch because she immigrates to the U.S.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just very different. Like her husband keeps thinking that it is a love triangle. And, like, she just, I don't know, like he's almost, like, the only part of her Korean heritage that she remembers at that point. Like, she's fully immigrated, you know, speaks English, gone to college, lived an entire life. Yeah.
I would say it's a really powerful film in terms of, like, thinking of that kind of, I think it's a love triangle because I think, the thing is, if she hadn't been married and he came into her life again as an adult, I think she would have been with him. But she was married with a husband who very much loved her and wanted to be with her, and I think she loved her husband too. And I think it's similar to Challengers, where it's like, okay, well, she is married to Art, and Josh O'Connor's character is, like, playing. I don't think it's as much of a menage a trois or whatever, but I think it's interesting that both of those people are playing off of those dynamics.
Yeah, I don't think of it as, like, with Challengers. I don't think Tashi's, like, thinking, like, what if I had gone with Patrick? Yeah. Like, I don't think it's, like, that. Y'all are kind of making me want to watch Past Lives now.
It's a great movie. You should watch it. I mean, they start out, that movie starts out with, like, that movie starts out with a later scene where, like, basically it's a scene of them, the three of them at a bar talking, and it's other people in the bar, like, people watching and being like, what do you think the relationship
is? That's funny. Like, it kind of gave me chills.
It is one of my favorite opening scenes for a movie because the work that opening scene is doing, and then when you see the context later on, is just, like, that is one of those times where I'm just like, this is a work of art.
Wow.
Like, it is very good.
Chills. Like, I kind of want to watch it now.
I hit my step goal while we were sitting here. I don't know how that happened.
See, that's when I'm like, there's no way.
But, anyways.
I didn't do anything.
Well, that's Challengers. Do you guys want to go into another topic for this week?
Oh, yes.
Molly said she doesn't know anything about.
I know a little bit. I know the bare minimum.
I'm so, Chris and I have been talking about this, like, the past couple of days. I'm excited.
I've been talking about it a lot. I got Alexa. I kind of made Alexa listen to all of the Drake and Kendrick Lamar songs the other day.
Okay, I was already, like, aware. I listen to Kendrick. I am aware of the music.
But, like, we were watching something else, and then I played one song, and then I just kept playing the song.
We were watching The Imitation Game. Was that last night?
No. It wasn't last night. We did it a couple nights ago.
What's that?
Whatever we want. With Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, my God.
Molly.
I know.
You love that movie.
I literally saw that in the movie theaters. Okay.
You said, what's that?
I thought, I was thinking The Invitation Game, and I was like, was that a horror movie? Ooh. I don't know. Ignore me.
So anyways, if you've been living under a rock and you don't know, Drake and Kendrick Lamar have been going at it, and it is so entertaining, but also fascinating. So, Chris, you know, like, I wrote down a bunch of notes, but you know the context. So, like, explain to our listeners and to Molly, like, the background and what's going on.
So, I'm just going to go off your notes here, and I'm just going to change a couple. No, it's okay. I see them.
So, you're
going to
change a couple things?
No, well, I'm just going to add a little more context to some things.
Continue. Continue.
Okay.
I want to make sure we're recording.
Hour 13. No, we're going. We're going. So, you say it starts out as Kendrick replying to Drake's song, First Person Shooter, which was a song, J. Cole song. That is kind of where this iteration started, but it goes back way, way, way further.
So, give us that.
So, you have your, like, you know, Kendrick, Drake, and J. Cole. Sorry. That's the fan again.
I was trying to put my feet under Alexa's blanket. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Wow, challengers.
past lives. So cold.
But yeah, like the three of them are considered the big three in rap by most people. Mostly because all three of them are commercially successful. All three of them can rap to varying degrees. So this is I will state my bias in here as we go.
Yeah, go ahead.
But so this kind of goes back to depends on how far back you want to go with Drake and Kendrick Lamar. So back in 2013, Kendrick Lamar put out a song called Control. Mm-hmm. And on this song, he calls out a million rappers. And he's just like, I got love for y'all, but I want to murder y'all. Like lyrically, murder y'all. He's like, I want to make sure lyrically. Your fan bases have never heard of y'all. Like, and like, he's really like calling them out. But like in rap, like because Kendrick Lamar is like very much he's a great rapper.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite rappers of
But if you're great, why do you have to call out other people?
Because that's rap. Fair. The thing with rap but is just
he's
like
he's not gonna kill him with kindness.
And I think that's why I like rap as much as I like sports. Even though in sports there is like a championship, in rap there really isn't. It's really just people saying just that like, I'm the best. Like, it's just like I'm the best, and I just want to prove that I'm the best. But the only way to prove that you're the best is to get in beef with somebody. Okay. Generally. So like it started back then.
A rapper, I hate conflict.
And
that's why you couldn't be a rapper.
So like it kind of tipped off back then. But like Drake, the thing with Drake that I always forget is like he's been around for like 15 years, which really annoys me. So this is where my bias comes in. I don't like Drake. Never been a fan of his music.
Yeah.
Never been a fan of him, but I never had a lot of things to go off of until recently. But Kendrick, I've always been a fan of. J. Cole. I'm not really a fan of his music either, but I'm a fan of him as a person. He seems very nice.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just a really odd thing there. But, like, Drake actually brought Kendrick on Kendrick's first tour. So, like, Kendrick opened up for Drake in 2011 on their tour. Mm-hmm. So, like, he kind of got him in the door and, Molly, like, brought him in.
What? Molly is piecing together, I feel like, the bits of this, how I was.
No,
this
is dance bomb.
Yeah, this is no, it's like bombs. Him this repeating is things bombs. That I have heard, and I'm like going, oh right, okay.
Yeah, so yes. Like
this is your dance mom.
This is your dance mom.
But like the thing with Kendrick Lamar is that even though like Drake brought him on tour that year, like the thing with Kendrick is like he was always like you could just tell, like you just knew when he was putting out, you know, Overly Dedicated and like all these mixtapes, like he's gonna be a star.
Yeah,
like he's going to be great. And then he ends up being great, and then he starts calling people out. He starts making classic albums, and it just, you know, he takes off, and Drake, you know, Drake was already off. Like, Drake's been popular for so long.
See, I would have thought Kendrick Lamar was around longer than Drake.
I did, too, until I started looking this up.
I mean, Best I Ever Had came out in 2009.
The thing is, I think Kendrick Lamar, I think, has more of a standing, I think, as a musician than Drake does, because, A, I agree, I think Kendrick Lamar... Again, like, lyrically, musically, is better than Drake, but I think Drake just is more poppy. But, like, Kendrick Lamar has literally won a Pulitzer.
I feel like Kendrick Lamar is more respected.
What did I just say? A Pulitzer.
Well.
I said a Pulitzer Lamar.
Wow.
But that's also always been, the tension with Drake in the rap community.
Yeah.
Is that he's always been seen by rappers that I respect. And myself as like he's a pop artist, like he's the dude from Degrassi, like he's Jimmy, right? Like is his name Jimmy?
I don't know.
I never watched.
Like, don't
that.
Ask me.
But
that.
Like it just like I'm just
care
like
about that
he.
Stupid ass show.
And, but the thing like, with but the sorry. Thing with Drake that I will always admit is like Drake can rap. He can rhyme words together. But the thing with Drake that I think his music has always just missed for me is just like. Like meaning,
yeah,
and like there just isn't anything there, and that's all you get with Kendrick. So then, as you go on, like you know, like you talk about like J. Cole when he, you know, he jumps into the beef and then immediately jumps out of the beef.
He's like, oh,
which at the time people were giving him a lot of grief for, including myself. But in hindsight, what a great decision he made.
I also want to go back, like you were saying, like Drake can rhyme things. His recent music. It's just him, I've noticed, he's saying the same lyric over and over again a lot of the times. Like, it like literally feels like filler lyrics. But, so, like, to clarify what Chris is talking about is, so, Yeah, so I guess, like, Drake came out with First Person Shooter, which referred to him, Drake, and J. Cole as Big Three, and then Kendrick was like, there's no Big Three, it's just me.
Yeah, J. Cole, Cole song.
Yeah.
And then J. Cole released 7-Minute Drill, which, like, was a diss track to Kendrick, but then he, like, immediately took it down and apologized.
Like,
took the song off of streaming services.
What?
Yeah.
He apologized at his own festival. So J. Cole does this festival every year in North Carolina called Dreamville. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I've heard it's a great festival. Every year he ends up performing. And, like, he brings in a bunch of different artists. And this is right after he had released 7-Minute Drill.
Yeah.
And, like, he apologized on stage. Like, he was just like...
What? Why? Yeah.
Because he said that his... I mean, he said something along the lines of, like, that it just hadn't... It just didn't sit right in my soul. Yeah. Like, he's like, it's some of the lamest, like, stuff I've ever done.
Yeah, and I think he knew Kendrick was going
to
destroy
him. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me when he does that.
Well, there were a couple things at the time where, like, one, like, I've always thought that J. Cole is a capable rapper. His music also is just never, I've just never really cared for his music.
Yeah.
His music does have depth to it.
Yeah.
I just think it goes to depths that I don't care about and they're not really like that. Like, I've just always felt that way about J. Cole.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, I've seen J. Cole 3 times.
Really?
Yes. At various music festivals.
And you don't have any kind of connection to him.
Well, like, I just, like, he's at the music festival, so, like, I'm gonna go see him, because, again, like, I like him. Like, I think he does really cool things. Like, he cares about things that I care about.
Okay.
I just think that his music is just not really... I just don't think it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, he was kind of billed as, you know, at the time, people were... kind of comparing him to Jay-Z back in the early 2010s. He's not Jay-Z.
No, but I don't really think about him
actually
at all.
Actually, when he made, like, the, like, oh, the Big Three comment, and then he was saying Drake, J. Cole, and Kendrick, I was like, what about...
Well, they're talking about the era, like the current era.
I guess I just wouldn't think J. Cole, like, I just don't think about him like that.
But people love, like, and this is where, like,
I like J. Cole's music.
I was unfamiliar with this until... probably the first time I saw him.
Yeah.
Like, I did not realize how many people, like, this, the first year I saw him was Bonnaroo 2016. He was not a headliner. I swear there were more people at his show than were at U2.
What?
Like, I mean, this is just me.
Well, U2, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, but it was, you know, like, it's U2. Like, people love U2, but, like,
They do, but people, like, our generation got so mad when they gave that, like, free album. Like, people don't love
it's
U2.
It's still on my phone. I can't get it off.
Yeah. You don't like the story of,
I love
story
U2.
Of,
listen.
I didn't listen to that album, but I appreciated it. They did the 30th anniversary of Joshua Tree at Bonnaroo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was great.
Yeah.
Like, anything past that other than Vertigo, which I just like to do the, but, like, I, you know, that's
you
all
do
I like.
Do that all
yeah, I do it a lot. But other than that, I'm like, whatever. Yeah.
But anyway, so then J. Cole took his song down, but then less than a week later, Drake kind of mocked Kendrick Lamar on Taylor Made Freestyle, which was a track that he released. It was only on social media because, as to quoting Chris, Drake loves social media. He loves Instagram. And on Taylor Made Freestyle, he used AI voice filters to mimic Tupac and Snoop Dogg. And because, like, Kendrick Lamar has always said, like, those were, like, people that he looked up to or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think he ended up having to take it down because people were like, you can't do that.
So, a little more context here. He also put out a song called Push Ups right before that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So, Push Ups came out. And, like, in Push Ups, he's directly... So, like, Kendrick and Drake kind of, like, they call them, like, subliminal shots in rap where it's, like, you have, like, a throwaway line. Drake is, I will say, Drake is the greatest of all time at a subliminal shot.
Mm-hmm,
he will throw a subliminal shot at some girl that he wanted to, like, he'll throw a subliminal shot at Rihanna.
Yeah.
He'll throw a subliminal shot at Serena Williams. He'll throw a subliminal shot at anybody that just made him upset.
Mm-hmm,
because he's a very sensitive person.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he makes push-ups, and, like, in push-ups, he's directly addressing Kendrick and talking about how short he is, because he's not tallest person in the world.
Yeah.
He also talks about, like, how his record label was ripping him off.
I think, like, the cover of that or whatever he posted is, like, a size 7 shoe label, because that's, like, the size that Kendrick Lamar wears, which is so
bad. That is so embarrassing.
Yeah, but Taylor Made Freestyle, another reason that it ended up getting taken down is because he was, like, Tupac's estate threatened to sue him.
Yeah.
So, like, no, it was not appreciated by
anybody. Yeah.
Right.
So, like, that, like, all of that happens. And then there's something that happened in between that, too. Kendrick put out a song called Like That on Future and Metro Boomin's album. Oh, like Future and Metro Boomin's album. I'm trying to fill in the context. I got you. But like in that song, he directly calls out Drake. Then Drake comes back with Push Ups and Taylor Made Freestyle. So then, like, I would say, I don't know, it's probably a week passes, and everybody's like, wow, like now it's like on. Like, it's been like years and years and years of like them kind of going back. It's almost like a international conflict at this point.
Yeah.
Just like their flare ups, but like, you know, like it you know, we end up kind of just settling it. But then a week later, Kendrick comes out with
how do they record stuff this fast?
So the thing about that, we'll get to that. Okay. So Kendrick puts out Euphoria, and like at this point we're getting into like 6 minute songs, like six minute, like I'm
he had
just
a lot
going
to
in.
Say,
which is also supposed to be a dig at Drake, because I didn't realize he's like an executive producer on Euphoria as well.
Yeah.
But also I'd forgotten that, but
song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Continue. But like during this time, like you have to remember that a lot of people had been coming out against Drake. Like there's been a sea change in rap where like for the long, like forever, people did not like Drake. Like I have to mention Pusha T back in 2018.
Oh yeah.
The story of Adidon, Pusha T, one of my favorite rappers, VA, let's go. But like, he put out a song basically revealing to the world that Drake is hiding a child.
Which one of that song when we were listening to the other day, I love that song because he basically is like kind of alluding to it, like whatever, and then he just is like, you are hiding a child is the lyric.
As in hiding one as in like he has a child. Yeah. Okay.
With
gotcha.
A porn star.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
But he did not want to reveal that to the world, obviously, because again, Drake. Very sensitive person.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I want to hurt his
So, feelings. Like, so Kendrick has been throwing shots at Pusha T forever.
Yeah.
I mean, Kendrick's been throwing shots at Drake. Pusha T's been throwing shots at Drake. Mm-hmm. I actually have a list of people here that have beefed with Drake and or thrown shots at Drake.
They're the metaphorical shooter in Degrassi.
Basically.
Okay, yeah. I love basically. That. That's, yeah. What a connection.
Put him in the wheelchair, yeah.
So, I actually wrote down, because I like to do notes of things, I wrote down Drake versus Kendrick Lamar, Rick Ross, Metro Boomin, ASAP Rocky, The Weeknd, Pusha T, Common, Megan Thee Stallion, NBA player Ja Morant, Dram, I Love Machinin, and XXXTentacion. Who's that really weird rapper that got killed a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But Drake just has always attracted drama because, as we've finally discovered, people do not like him. Rick Ross has been like going on Instagram for the past month just calling him a white boy and how much he hates him.
Yeah.
And they've worked together numerous times over the years. But like it's just people have never liked Drake. And I'm really glad that people have gotten here now, because now I can finally put words to the things that I like.
Yeah.
Like I can't rap, but Euphoria, I was like, that's basically my song. that's basically just my song. Like he's just always been like and then Kendrick put out two straight songs against him. He put out another song called 616 in LA. Like that song came out like 3 days after Euphoria. Then Drake put out a song back at him called Family Matters, and that one has a music video to it. So like most of Kendrick's songs have just had like a album cover, and then it's just the song on YouTube or Instagram.
Yeah.
But this one had an entire music video.
It had a cinematic element to it.
So one of the things, so I will say, like, what's interesting is with diss tracks are so interesting because sometimes they, like, are just literally that's all they are, diss tracks. And sometimes, like, they can be really good. I think Kendrick's diss tracks, for the most part, like, I really like Meet the Grams, I liked 616 in L.A., are actually, like, I'm like, I would listen to this whether it was about, like, this drama or not.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Drake's music, especially in this regard, I was just like, this is not good. It was just not a good song. And so, like, in these songs, one of the things that, like Kendrick is coming at Drake, and I should clarify, this is all allegedly based on, like, rumors and things that they're saying in the songs. We don't know any of this for sure. But he's, like, hitting on Drake's family. He's basically alluding to Drake, like, dating underage women.
I don't know if that's alleged at this point.
It's not... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there's... I forget which song it is, but, like, I wrote down, like, two of my favorite lines.
Not Like Us.
Yeah, where he goes... You know, you see something like you're trying to strike a chord, but it's probably A minor.
Yes.
And it's
and
so...
And he sings it in A minor.
Like, A minor. It's actually... Yeah. And it's so funny.
Yeah.
But, and then another one that I he hates Drake yes. so much. He literally
he's like, you're a trafficker.
Yes.
Like, it gets, like, real
He literally goes, I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk. I hate the way that you dress.
Yes.
And then he lists off more things, which I think is very funny. Like, Chris was like, I was going to make a meme to that of, yeah, like, I've our cat and our dog.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of those.
But it's interesting because, like, so Drake comes back and in one of his songs is basically just, like, he alludes to, like, Kendrick Lamar, like, being unfaithful to his wife, and he also alludes to, like, potential, like, domestic abuse with his wife, mm-hmm. which is just, like, I think it was apparently people have said, like, Drake was hunting around for info on Kendrick Lamar, and, like, there wasn't any dirt.
Well, Kendrick references that in his song, yeah. 616 in L.A. So, the thing
yeah,
about
sorry, go
this
back to your...
is, like, the thing about this is, like, Drake has done this a couple times now with rappers that he's beefed with. He did it with Pusha T, mm-hmm. and he did it again with Kendrick, where he almost falls into a trap, where, yeah. like, they're trying to lure him in
yes.
to just, like, starting something,
mm-hmm.
because they know that they have so much more for him than he does for them.
Yeah.
And Pusha T did it where, like, you know, like it... The Pusha T one started out, it seemed like it started out like, oh, they're throwing shots. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the story of Adidon comes out, and it's like, you are hiding a child, and, like, your producer is going to die any day
yeah.
Of
yeah.
an illness. And, like, it just, and your father, like, your mother's a loser, and your father, you know, left when you were five, hell of a dad thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, and the same thing with Kendrick now, where it's just like, he just absolutely despises Drake, and there is clearly somebody on Drake's side that is giving information to Kendrick. So, like, yeah. he so for 616 in LA, so, like, this was the second song that Kendrick released in a row.
Mm-hmm.
The cover is, like, a picture of these, like, gloves. It's like they look like driving gloves almost, and, like, mm-hmm. it, you know, it just looks kind of random.
Yeah,
so he does 616 in LA. The morning, I guess it was early on May 3rd. And then Drake does Meet the Grams later that night with the music video and everything. Or not Meet the Grams. He does Family Matters yeah. with, like, the music video and everything. And as someone who does not like Drake, I think the song is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
He throws shots at a lot of people in that song. He talks about Rick Ross, talks about A$AP Rocky, talks about The Weeknd. Because, again, Drake has a lot of enemies now.
Yeah.
But probably about 40 minutes after that song comes out, Kendrick releases Meet the Grams.
How is this possible?
Because Kendrick is clearly getting information on when things are going to happen, because the cover for Meet the Grams is the cover for 616 in LA blown out even further
yeah.
to reveal a bunch of Drake's clothes and a subscription for Ozempic.
Prescription?
What? Prescription for Ozempic.
Is Drake on Ozempic?
I guess so.
That is so. There have been a couple of.
It's not important. I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, there have been a
insomnia
like,
medication.
Yeah, well, that. It was like a medication that can be used for insomnia, but it's also kind of you can also be used to kind of like drug someone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So that's part of it.
And
too.
It's literally laid out. The way it's laid out is almost like how you would like police would lay out. Like,
wait,
stuff
that's
from
insane.
A crime scene.
Somebody from Drake's side took a picture of that?
Yes.
Yeah, and he says in the song.
Yeah, in 616 in L.A., Kendrick, he does a line. He keeps doing, like, he's like, have you ever? Like, in each song, he's like, you want to play have you ever?
Mm-hmm.
And then he does it in 616. He's like, you want to play? You ready? You finally ready? He's like, what if somebody for OVO is working for me?
Y'all just get on the phone with each other at this point.
No,
this is better. This is more entertaining. But also, like, he says in, I think, multiple songs, he's like, you must really be a bad guy because everyone hates you.
Yeah, he's like,
people are feeding him info.
That's 616 in LA. He's like, your crew thinks you're a horrible person. He's like, you got 100 people in your crew. He's like, 20 of them hate you. He's like, one of them stands right next
Drake's
to you.
Drake's about to fire like everyone
like,
in his staff.
I think that's probably.
Yes, he should.
I think he's probably trying to do that. But I think that there's just been so many things over the years where it's just like people allege. You know, if we're going to go off of rumors, I mean, y'all, you know, we're popping in, right? We're just talking.
Yeah, popping in.
I mean, I think a rumor from back in the day was that The Weeknd actually told Pusha T about Drake's child. Because The Weeknd and Drake used to be very close. And then Drake did a lot of things to The Weeknd. Like, he kind of stole some of his songs. Then he dated Bella Hadid after The Weeknd did. So, you know, like, they didn't like each other. But The Weeknd also is on this Future and Metro Boomin album, which, like, everybody's on just throwing shots at each other. It just came out in March.
Yeah.
But The Weeknd, like, he said something to the line. He's like, I'm so glad I never signed my life away. And he's, like, referencing Drake, because Drake tried to sign him back when The Weeknd first got popular. And he was like, no, because they're both, you know, Canadian. And he was just like, hey, I like your vibe. And you know, Drake is...
both Canadian.
Well, like, they're both, like, Canadian R&B-ish out, like, artists. And, like, but, you know, Drake is just... He's just so willing to steal anybody's style and anybody's thing. Like, he's just...
I love the whole thing. Well, so one of the rumors is, like... And Drake with Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things.
Yes!
And he that's always been a weird thing because, I mean, they'll say in interviews, or Millie Bobby Brown will say in interviews, like, yeah, Drake, like, will message me. Like, this was years ago, but she was, like, literally, like, 11 or whatever. And she's like, Drake will text me and be like, I miss you so much. Yeah, and it's, like, really messed up.
I remember,
She said that, like, when she was 14.
14, yeah.
He was
texting her. And so I guess, like, Drake came out after him saying stuff about, like, minors or whatever. Drake was like, he says something about Millie Bobby Brown, and they're like, we didn't say Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
So there are so many things about Drake's last song that he released, The Heart Part 6.
Mm-hmm.
The Heart Part 6 is not a good song. Like, it is just Drake out here trying to refute a bunch of things. He claims in that song that he fed Kendrick Lamar fake info about his daughter and about all of these things. Oh, yeah, we forgot to say,
one of the songs Kendrick Lamar is like, you're hiding a daughter, too.
Yes, Family Matters. So he tries, like, he basically says in that song, he references Millie Bobby Brown by name. He references a couple of other things by name, and people have gone back, and I did, too, and I was just like, Kendrick actually never said that specifically, but again, if somebody just lays a trap for you and they want to destroy you, you gotta make yourself less, like, you gotta make yourself harder to destroy.
Yeah.
But that's just not how Drake gets down.
Yeah.
Like, and the thing is, like, people, I am not, like, I like Drake in the sense of, like, when I was in college, all his music was popular. His last few albums, I don't really enjoy that much. His other stuff, like his pop stuff, whatever. People love Drake, but he also has always kind of seemed like that kind of guy. Like, just a can't really trust him type of guy. Like, I don't know. But I also am biased because I love Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, if he says it, I'm like, yeah.
At this point, it's so much further than Kendrick. Like, there are just so many people that have worked with Drake over the years.
Yeah.
And that are now, like, even like, worked with him last year. Like, Rick Ross and Drake just put out, I swear to God, they just put out a song, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But, like, they just have never actually liked him. Right. And, like, you know, like, they're, like, clowning on him. And, like, the thing with me, and, like, I love rap music. Like, I always have. I just always thought that Drake was just such an insult to rap.
Yeah.
Because, like, he raps, and, like, I think that's kind of why, like, Rick Ross and them were, like, calling him, like, white boy and all this stuff. Like, and Kendrick was like, I don't want you to say the N-word anymore. He's like, he says that in multiple songs. He's like, it just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
So, like, of course, Drake does it, like, to intro one of his Family Matters. Like, he just does it. And it's just like, that's just how he's always been viewed, but nobody really, like, wanted to say anything. But I think now that his music is, like, getting, it's not even that his music is getting worse, I just think that his music hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And, like, that's
the
thing about, like, Kendrick and, like, even J. Cole and, like, Kanye and, like, all these other artists that, like, have done these things over the years where it's like the music just keeps getting better. That wasn't the fan this time. That was Molly.
Molly fell on.
No, like, he's just stayed the same. And he just hasn't grown up. Like, he still acts like a kid from Degrassi. Like, he just hasn't grown up.
Well, and that's a thing, like, I heard where someone was talking about this, like, Leonardo DiCaprio, where it's, like, the age that you become famous is kind of, like, the age that you're a little bit stuck at.
Yeah.
Which isn't, like, an excuse or anything. But I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I also think, I just wanted to reference, I forget which song it is. I think, is it Meet the Grams or Not Like Us, where it's, like, a picture of Drake's house, and it literally has all these, like, icons of people to be, like, oh, you're hiding children or hiding people or whatever.
That's creepy, it's, like, an icon to be, like you're on the registry.
Oh, yes.
Is it his actual house?
Yeah, yes. It is.
And so I was looking up in the news today. People keep talking about, like, so a member of Drake's security team was shot. And we were like, oh, like, now they're trying to say it's because, like, that picture of his house was posted. But I don't know. Like, people, like, the police are like, we don't know if there's any connection.
The chances are, and again, this is, like, people really rush to make it, like, a Kendrick Drake thing. Mm-hmm. The thing about rap beef is, like, if you win the rap beef, which Kendrick kind of undeniably did, why would he then go shoot up Drake's house? That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Kendrick just doesn't do that, but the more likely reason for that happening is, like, it was Drake's house in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, I know it's in Toronto, but, like, for me, I just, like, and, like, Kendrick talks about it, too. He's just, like, you're Canadian. It's like, yeah, you're Canadian.
From Canada.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like, and that's why I think people view him as, like, such a culture vulture. Mm-hmm. Of just, like, you don't really have a style.
Yeah.
Like, you just come down here and you're like, oh, I'm hanging out with dudes from Atlanta, so I'm just gonna make Atlanta music. You know, Dram, like, you know, like, you know the song Cha Cha?
Yeah.
I mean, listen to Cha Cha and then listen to Hotline Bling. Like, Drake's absolutely stole Cha Cha from Dram and like just made it even more popular.
And to, like, all of our Canadian listeners, we're not referring to you, just Drake as being Canadian.
Unless you're Drake.
But, like, Canada is, like, it's Canada. It's like, aw. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like the thing with rap and, like, the reason that I always loved it growing up is that it and this is going to make me sound like such a boomer, but like, like, hip hop, like, you know, 50 years of hip hop. And it's just like, it's just so crazy that, like, it is now pop.
Yeah.
Like, it, like rap is the most popular genre. Yeah. And, like, it has been now for, I don't know, almost 10 years, I feel like. Probably 15. Yeah. Like rap songs are pop songs now.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's,
I would say longer than that. Like, if you listen to, like, the 90s, like, all those, like, but the top hits, it's like.
But that was its own genre.
Yeah. But back then, I mean, back then, white people were still afraid of rap because people were still dying a lot.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, it was popular, but, like, it was popular to, you know, younger people. Yeah. But now those people have gotten older and they haven't stopped becoming rap fans.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, now it's just ubiquitous. And I think that's, you know, that's how you end up with a Drake.
Yeah.
It's just Drake. Because, like, you know, now it doesn't have to be authentic. It doesn't have to be anything. Like this beef and, like, him losing this beef probably is not going to affect his career at all. Because the people that like Drake do not like him because he's authentic. Because if they did, then they would all be saying that I'm a phony, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, it's just almost at the point where it doesn't really matter. But I really appreciate Kendrick doing what he did because I don't like him either.
He's a hero.
Yeah, he is. Pulitzer Kenny. That's what he put on the... If you can hear that, that's my little dog snoring like a grown man. But
yeah, it's not an old man. It's actually
I forgot to mention dog. Not Like Us. What a great song.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful.
Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to say on the topic?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. Wow. I'm sorry to take up all y'all's time.
No.
It's been great.
This has been good.
This is probably one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, we hope you all feel the same way too to our 14 listeners.
I think they will.
Is this your longest episode?
It's
an hour. If you've stayed this long, you came through Dance Moms, through Challengers. You guys are real fans, and I'm speaking to you, Molly's parents.
And Eric. We touched on three topics only, but, like, they were huge topics.
Yeah, I think this was a great...
There someone out here that all, like, they're like, oh, good, I can't wait for the Dance Mom. Like, the Dance Mom stuff was great.
Yeah.
Like, now we're going to get into the other things I like.
The fact that we went from, like, Dance Moms to, like, Kendrick Lamar.
There has to be a Venn diagram.
I was going to make a joke earlier. I was going to be like, so Chloe is Kendrick in this situation and, like, Maddie is. I'm joking.
I don't remember any of their names except for Maddie. I'm sorry.
Oh, good. Well, that's what Abby Lee Miller would have wanted you to remember.
I don't want
to
do things she wants.
Okay.
Abby Lee Miller is the Drake of Dance Moms.
Yeah, kind of.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who's the Tashi of Dance Moms?
The Tashi would be technically Abby Lee Miller.
Oh. Who's the Tashi of Drake versus Kendrick?
She's manipulating people.
Pusha T.
No.
I can't wait to name this episode.
I was thinking that Tashi would be... Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention Pharrell. Drake also has beef with Pharrell.
I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Here's another 20 minutes for the episode.
Yeah. No. But no, that's a good... I actually thought about Pharrell during this episode.
Oh, we love Pharrell. Shout out to 757. Unless he does something bad, then
never mind. Well, Pusha T, also 757.
Yeah. Also 757.
He's okay, I already said that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Also, we talked... If you listen to our Met Gala episode, but we really touched on a lot this... Today.
Yeah, we have been recording for like 3 hours straight.
Yeah, seriously.
In case you guys are wondering, in case you've made it to this hour and 45 in, we had a snack break. We've recorded a mini episode.
We had our first guest, which
we've
is
had
like
our
huge.
First guest.
That's
thank
what I'm
you,
saying.
Chris.
This might be my favorite episode.
Chris Williams.
Chris really popped in.
My boyfriend Chris, fame, and all the other great things he does.
My boyfriend Chris.
Yeah.
That's one word.
But I think, Chris, are you going to do our little outro with us?
Aww.
You're going to have to let me know what to do.
Yeah. Okay, when we say bye.
Oh, I got it. No,
yeah,
I got
yeah,
it.
You got it. You got it. Okay. Knows. Ready? Okay. Well, thanks for listening to Pop It In, and we'll see you next week.
Take care.
But no! That wasn't it. That wasn't it.
Okay,
you thought
everyone.
We said take care at the end?
No, I was making a trick.
We're done. Goodbye.
Bye.